Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radiolab is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab. Our topic today?
Choice and human destiny.
Yeah. With the way we are.
Is that the way we're going to stay?
Ah, very nicely put.
Yes. In the last section, we were talking about baboons mm-hmm. and their propensity to serious change, which is a maybe or a maybe not. We don't really know.
Yeah, we'll know in 1,000 years.
But let's switch our ape. We'll go to Oregonians, which is a rare subsect of human beings.
To set it up, we were thinking a lot about small groups on this show. You know, because that's what we are. We are small group primates. That's the phrase that's sometimes used to describe us humans, and it's a phrase that can carry some negative connotations. As in, we evolved in these small groups, so we are predisposed to be small-minded. No! Small is not always a bad thing. I'm going to tell you a story now. This is a small group story. It's, just as a warning, contains a moment or two that's a tiny bit graphic. But we hope you'll stick with it because it's a really cool story. It takes place in a small town, like really small. The kind of town
where you can dial the wrong number and still have a conversation.
Because you know everybody. So tell me where we are.
Beautiful downtown Silverton. Essentially, our downtown has not changed since the late 40s, early 50s.
Oh, yes, it has. But we'll get to that. This is Stu Rasmussen. He is our main character. And a little while back, Stu gave myself and producer Aaron Scott a tour.
Movie theater on the corner, the old hardware store on this corner. This
a tour of his favorite place on Earth, Silverton, Oregon, which is about 40 miles from Portland. It's about 40 years from Portland, actually.
You know, it's the town I grew up in, and this is my image for what I want Silverton to be. You know, I rode my bicycle down this street and came to the hardware store to get it.
We're doing good, Vince. How are you?
Does that happen to you a lot? People just honk and wave?
All the time.
Oh, yeah?
It's a small town. Everybody knows me.
If it were up to Stu, this town would never change. It would stay frozen in that quaint Norman Rockwell candy-coated image from his boyhood. The weird thing, though, is that that image in his head would probably never have included a guy like Stu. At least Stu as he is now. And if this is a show about change, here is a story about a pretty radical bit of change where you wouldn't expect to find it.
Speaking of which, can you describe where we are and what we're looking at?
Well, we're standing in front of the Palace Theater on the corner of Oak and Water Street.
This is one of those Gone with the Wind theaters where the big marquee and the bulb lights and everything.
Built in 1935 and in continuous operation ever since.
Stu pulls out some keys and opens it up.
But starting to get really cold.
He suggested that we do the interview here in the town's only theater.
It even smells like a Gilded Age theater.
Which at 1 p.m. still smelled like popcorn from the previous night and was filled with nothing but 200 empty red velvet seats.
It's not what you expect in a small town theater.
No, this is beautiful.
Are you going to go ahead and turn the lights off?
Yeah.
Okay, see you later.
Okay, thank you.
We plopped ourselves.
Sit right here, what do you think?
Best seats in the house, right in the middle.
Let's sit and pretend we're watching the movie of your life.
Well, there's a dull movie.
Hardly. So, the movie of Stu begins in 1975. He's 27, and he's in a theater just like this.
Seminal moment in my life was when the Rocky Horror Picture Show came out.
Stu is in the projectionist booth, because that's his job. He's changing the reels, and at some point during one of the musical numbers, he glances at the screen.
And it was like, oh.
What was the oh?
Here was this movie with a guy in drag on screen.
Just a sweet transvestite.
He's a sweet transvestite. Transsexual Transylvania. Those are words that I've never heard. I watched that again and again.
Fast forward 10 years, Stu now owns the theater, just like his dad had before him. He's an upstanding member of the town. He's on the Silverton City Council, then on the library board. And then he starts to transform. And everyone will tell you, it began with the nails.
I think I probably started having my nails done in 94 or 95. And started out with very masculine nails without polish and square ends, and then slowly grew them out. And then I went into what I considered a masculine nail color of blue.
And then he says he gradually started to paint them red, and then he put acrylic tips, which got longer and longer.
This was the first test of the community.
Hello, Laurie.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
How are you?
Because I would be at the theater taking tickets.
Can I have two tickets?
He'd be dressed as usual in his plaid shirt and jeans.
And his hand would come out for their ticket, and...
What in the hell are those?
You can't miss it.
And you know, he had long fingernails.
Hello.
That's Dennis Bean, longtime Silvertonian.
One time when I had to give him my ticket.
And that's Megan DeSalvo. She's 17.
And he ripped it, and like his nails like went down the palm of my hand and just gave me the chills.
Yeah, I think probably his nails were the first thing most people noticed.
Kyle Palmer, veterinarian and city councilman.
Born and raised here in Silverton.
Like, was there talk? Were people sitting?
Oh, definitely talk, but it happened so gradually.
Which is something you hear again and again. It happened gradually.
You know, first it was the nails, and then at some point in time, he changed the focus of the movie theater and was really making a game attempt to get new releases down in the theater. And
frequently, you know, when there was a theme kind of movie, he would get into costume. My name is Ken Hector, former mayor of Silverton, Oregon. And very often, the costume would be female attire.
This was step two of Stu's very careful transition. According to everyone we spoke with, for years after the nails, he would, quote, promote that week's movie by dressing up.
Well, one of the new Star Wars movies was out, and it wasn't a coincidence he was dressed as Queen Amidala.
Come back! I love you!
Whatever name is from the movie.
Years ago, I remember some years ago, there was a movie called My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
That's John Bach, also a lifelong Silvertonian.
That whole day, he wandered around town in a wedding dress, complete with a veil.
That, of course, got everybody talking.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people laughed about it.
And at first, I don't think people put it together with...
This is Linda Webb. She's a registered nurse.
Sexuality, transgender, or any of those things. I think we thought he was just dressing up to go along with his with his movies.
Yep.
There was clearly a let's go by the movie theater tonight because we've got to know what Stu's wearing.
But for Stu, this was just the beginning of something. He wasn't just clowning around. When did your gender complexities begin?
Probably 14 or 15. I think I was a shy young man and... interfacing with girls. My mother was a bit strange on that, in that girls were evil and no girl was good enough for her son and da-da-da-da-da. So
did you date at all?
Not until I was out of high school.
So girls were kind of scary, it sounds like.
Oh, girls were scary, yeah.
While everybody else went on dates, he says, he would build computers from scratch. And even today, in his basement, you'll find an entire electrical shop.
Oh my God.
Fun stuff. RF generator, spectrum analyzer, logic analyzer, another logic analyzer.
In any case, Stu says the best that he can explain himself, gender-wise, is just to say that when he looks in the mirror, he likes himself better when he's dressed as a woman.
I don't know how to describe it. It's just, I can't understand it. I mean, some people like to dress up and look like a cowboy or a lumberjack, whatever. You know, it's your mental image of yourself that you look in the mirror and you like.
So, after the nails, after dozens of episodes of socially acceptable cross-dressing, Stu took the next step. He began to perform some experiments, like he would go to the lumberyard just to get some stuff.
A couple of pounds of nails or something.
All the while, he would be wearing a padded bra under his flannel shirt, just to see what would happen.
So this for you was like a test. It was like a calculated test to
absolutely
gauge...
if it was possible. If I could survive with breasts.
So, when he was 52, he drove into Portland, visited a doctor who put him to sleep, and the doctors made two small incisions.
One under each breast, about an inch and a half or 2 inches long.
Then they pulled back the skin on each side, slid in an uninflated balloon.
And then pumped it up with water until the skin was stretched to the point that it was almost transparent.
Mm, that sounds very painful. Was it?
Well, I was asleep at the time.
But when he woke up, he was a different man. Because he now had several pounds of new stuff hanging off his chest.
What were you thinking at that moment?
I was thinking, what have I done? It was like There's no going back.
I can remember being in Mac's place downtown at a table, and he was coming across the street with his breasts prominently showing, and it was the first time any of us realized that he had actually had surgery. And one lady was going, "Look, look," and the other lady was going, "Don't look, don't look."
You know, you'd see Stu going across the street, and oh my God, look at Stu!
My God, what is he doing?
It just
sort of shocking.
There was a buzz around town.
Was it the situation where he'd walk by, and then heads would turn, hushed voices would ensue?
Yes, basically.
This is Victoria Sage, Stu's longtime girlfriend. They've been together for 36 years.
So we would be walking in our local Goodwill, and we'd be a few aisles away from each other, and I would hear, "That used to be Stu Rasmussen," like he had changed somehow. Stu's just trying to fulfill that body image he's got in his head.
But he's also going to, in a way, ask you to adjust your body image of your mate. Has that been difficult?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. If you want to get kinky about it, a man with tits is kind of cool.
Huh. Okay. Was there ever any concern?
There was for me. Not so much for Stu, I think. Partly because he didn't hear as many whispers as I felt I did. But I was concerned for the theater business.
Not without reason. A lot of kids in the town stopped coming to the theater because their parents wouldn't let them. Ticket sales took a hit. And it wasn't long before pickup trucks full of teenage boys would drive by the theater yelling slurs.
Oh, I don't know that I go so far as... Well, yeah, I guess... Faggot is a slur, I guess.
And so you get to this point in the sped-up movie narrative of Stu. This point right here where even though he took it so slowly and was so careful, it's still easy to imagine things turning ugly.
I don't know. What was that movie about the boy that was, drug and beat to death because he was gay in a small town in the Midwest? You know what, boys
don't... Matthew Shepard?
Yeah.
Might be a little extreme, but according to Linda Webb, Silverton's not so different from Laramie, Wyoming, where Matthew Shepard lived. It's a small town.
Very traditional.
Very conservative.
You know, you got a lot of rednecks in Silverton.
That's how Dennis Bean puts it. So it's not crazy to expect the worst. But here's the surprise. And the whole reason we came here to Silverton.
Monday, January 5th, 2009.
The worst did not happen. There was no redneck rebellion. In fact, the opposite happened.
Please raise your right hand.
Something historic.
Repeat after me. I.
On January 5th, 2009, the town of Silverton elected Stu mayor.
Of the city of Silverton, Marion County, Oregon. Congratulations.
Silverton has elected the nation's first openly transgender mayor.
The nation's first openly transgender mayor.
Well, change is definitely in the air this election. Take Stu Rasmussen, for example.
As openly transgendered.
As he runs his hometown in heels.
Speaking of heels, this is in fact the sound of Stu's 4-inch heels pounding on linoleum as he goes to a city council meeting.
Hello, Harold. Couldn't be better. How are you? Good.
Now, call us, city elitists or whatever, but a mayor in a plunging V-neck sweater and a black miniskirt, not what you would expect in a tiny conservative Republican town. So we wanted to know, why did this happen here? So producer Aaron Scott and I walked around town for a couple days, and we interviewed dozens of people, including...
Gentlemen.
Guy named Ken Hector, who Stu beat out for mayor. He's a conservative Republican, definitely not one of Stu's big fans.
It was just a difference in philosophy about, I don't want to sound pretentious, but, as a mayor, I think there's certain expectations about professionalism that you should exhibit. He would come in with a tight, clinging top with cleavage down to here.
You're almost pointing at your belly button there.
Well,
a little bit higher.
Come on. When you're at the council meeting, show some dignity here and just dress in the appropriate attire for the occasion.
Ken even tried to get the city council to impose a dress code on Stu. But when we asked him, are you surprised that the town has embraced Stu and even gone so far as to elect a mayor? He said,
No.
No, not in this case.
You know, Stu's a rarity in that, you know, there's a lot of people in this town who are extremely religious, very conservative people. Were it a stranger who came into town suddenly, I'm sure the support and perception might have been different, but you're talking about a native son who grew up here.
And he said, look, Stu runs the only theater in town, so he's out there every weekend.
Standing out in front of the Palace Theater, taking tickets.
So everybody knows him. Not only that, back in the day, he used to be the cable guy, so he's literally been in everybody's home. He's still the guy you call if you have trouble with your computer. So it might sound strange to you, but it's really not. And that is when it hit me. Actually, under the right circumstances, a small town can be like the most progressive place on earth. And it's exactly because everyone's all up in your grill. You are forced to know people. Like, for instance,
how long have you known Stu?
Oh, my goodness. I grew up with Stu. I mean, I remember when Stu was like an altar boy at the church with my brother.
This is Susie Seamus, you know, a retired teacher.
Yeah, his parents and my parents were friends.
Like a lot of folks in Silverton, she has known Stu for so long and in so many different contexts that she can't do that New York thing with him where you see someone on the sidewalk and you size him up instantly and think, eh, freak. No, to her, he's way too complicated for that. You know, to her, he's Stu the altar boy, Stu the computer geek.
Yeah, I probably would call him a geek.
Stu the city councilman, Stu the mayor. Or...
it's just Stu.
Just Stu.
Just Stu.
Whatever, that's him.
You know, go on about your business.
Now, to be clear, a lot of the people we talk to, in fact, some of the same folks who said, yeah, Stu's just Stu, are still not happy about this situation.
No, I mean, I don't think God's a cross-dresser.
They either felt it was morally wrong, as in the case of this minister, Tom Smith.
And Genesis 1:27 says, so God created man in his own image. In the image
or
of God,
some folks, him. Like Linda Webb's husband, John, just felt like he takes it way too far.
It's right there. It's in your face. He dresses kind of like a streetwalker.
You feel that that's confrontational?
I do.
But most of the people who had objections, it was a little more nuanced, and it went something like this.
Well, I personally did not vote for him for mayor because I didn't feel that it was a good idea to have someone that looked like that representing us. But on the other hand, he is a good man, and he's got this town at heart.
In other words, according to John Bach, the problem really isn't Stu or the town. It's the outside. All those people out there who are going to hear about Stu and then judge them. Which is what makes November 25th, 2008 such an interesting day. Stu had just been elected mayor. He'd squeaked it out by about 400 votes, but he hadn't yet been sworn in. When a group of Christian extremists from Kansas showed up in town and started marching up and down Main Street, yelling at people. And at one point, they even unfurled an American flag, put it on the ground, and stepped on it, just to show how offensive they found Stu.
It's our duty to come out here and preach to everyone. The man is disgusting.
These folks hate Stu, because they will not by any means warn him about the sin that's taking him to hell.
So unpleasant, and then bringing up signs that say things like
God hates Silverton, God hates your mayor,
God hates fags,
your pastor is a whore.
It's an abomination for a man to put on a woman's clothes and to be the opposite sex.
A few folks from the town decided to start a counter-protest.
We stood across the street from these people, by and large.
Just a few guys at first. Now, earlier, someone had suggested...
all the guys ought to dress up as girls, and all the girls ought to dress up as guys.
Yossi Davidson said his initial reaction was, yeah, right. But there he was, in a dress.
Is that the first time you've been in a dress?
I admit it, but that really actually was the first time.
He says that at first, he and the two or three other guys who had on women's clothing felt a little weird. But then...
people just started coming. It was just amazing.
Of a couple of hundred people. I mean, men dressed like women, women dressed like men.
Some of the people that I saw down there were surprising to me because I had labeled them in my head as conservative.
And people would drive by, people with signs.
God loves Silverton. God loves Stu.
With costumes.
The town was really alive.
And the crowd just kept getting bigger and bigger.
What were you thinking at that moment? From what I understand, you were standing off to the side just watching. What was going through your mind?
Yeah, well, honestly, I tried to discourage people from even giving them the time of day, saying, don't give them any attention.
I couldn't get that to happen. They were so angry. They came out, 200 people, men in dresses, grandmothers, babies. It's just amazing. And that was the town, that wasn't me. Sorry, I get a little emotional.
That must have been a turning point for you.
The biggest one, yeah.
Before we go to break, just want to give props to Aaron Scott, who did a huge chunk of the reporting for that piece and co-produced it with me.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Issa St. Clair calling from Philadelphia to read the credits. Radiolab is supported in part by the National Science Foundation and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org. Thanks, guys.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.